And a good Friday morning to you. Happy Valentine's Day. And welcome into the Nick Craig Show, streaming live this morning on YouTube, Rumble, and X. You can take the show with you 24/7 on demand by checking it out in your favorite podcast app. It is the Nick Craig Show wherever you get your podcasts. And if you'd be so gracious as to review the show in whatever app you're listening into, most of the time if you scroll down to the bottom, it'll give you an option to leave a rating or review. That would be greatly appreciated. Well, we start off where you would not want to begin any day, but especially Valentine's Day, a murder in the city of Wilmington yesterday morning. Here are the details over at WECT News this morning. The Wilmington Police Department confirmed one man is dead after a shooting near Kerr Avenue and the MLK Parkway. For folks familiar with this area, yes, this is the homeless encampment that has existed for, at this point, well over a couple of years at this intersection of MLK and Kerr Avenue. This is unfortunately not a new story. This is unfortunately not a new area. And as the details are coming in this morning, there have, of course, been many a calls, many a questions about this area. And, well, the details are as follows. WPD responded around 11 o'clock yesterday morning to a reported shootings in what was the 600 block of Barkley Hill Drive. There's no addresses back there. When officers arrived, they found a man with a gunshot wound to the chest. EMS attempted to revive him, but he died on the scene. WPD did confirm that a woman shot the man with a handgun. A gun and knife were also found on the scene. WPD confirmed that three suspects were detained. According to the department, quote, the WPD Criminal Investigation Division is investigating this homicide case. This appears to be an isolated incident, and there is no current ongoing threat to the public. Lieutenant Greg Willett said that the shooting happened on Duke Energy's property. This area is also known for a homeless encampment. He told WECT, right now, I think the folks involved are probably unsheltered or homeless. I'm not 100% certain, but based on what I've seen, it does appear that it took place at a makeshift camp. So this area of town has been talked about for quite some time now, and for very good reason. This property, if you are heading towards downtown on the MLK Parkway and you pass the Kerr Avenue intersection, it's on the left. And for months and years, it's been up and down. There's people living in that property. Then law enforcement comes in, kicks them out, cleans up all the trash, which, by the way, you and I pay for tens of thousands of dollars in trash recovery every time this happens. Then after a period of time, the individuals come back. It's the same thing over again, rinse and repeat. There have been numerous issues that have taken place, not just in this area, but in these general homelessness camps that exist throughout southeastern North Carolina, specifically in the city of Wilmington. Numerous issues. Rapes, murders, severe violence, aggravated assault. I mean, it's been an issue for years now. And for whatever reason, nothing is ever done about it. Yes, the police come in and they clear out the area, but then the individuals just come right back. And so now you've got an individual who's dead, three individuals that are in custody, all of this, I believe, completely preventable. These homeless encampments that exist throughout the country, not just here in Wilmington, but throughout the country, are breeding grounds for illegal activity. Are breeding grounds for violence. It happens all the time. And for whatever reason, this idea that, well, we just need to be compassionate with these individuals is the prevailing thought. Explain to me how this is compassion. You've got a guy that's now dead. Oh, a woman that shot him that is likely going to be brought up and convicted on murder charges. Explain to me the compassion that exists in this situation. Tell me how the homeless community, or as the left and Democrats want to put it, the unsheltered community, explain to me how they are better off this morning after this murder yesterday around 11 o'clock. I'm waiting. I've never understood this idea. I've never been able to wrap my head around how individuals, predominantly bleeding heart liberals when they deal with issues of homelessness. Why they believe that just allowing these kinds of communities, these homeless encampments, to grow and fester the way that they are is the best solution possible. I've never been able to wrap my head around that. Because this is what happens. There's crazy amounts of drug uses, overdoses, as I've mentioned, murders, rapes. It's very, very common in these areas. The solution to, and again, you can't paint, you can't, of course, say that one thing fixes this. This is another situation where there is a multi-pronged solution to the problem. From what I understand, having spoken with law enforcement in the past about this privately, having spoken privately to individuals that are in positions to provide assistance and help to these individuals, there's this idea that, well, we just need to open homeless shelters or we need to open detox centers to get these people the help that they need. But there's a very, very sad reality that comes into play here. We are a free country, at least as of right now. You cannot compel an individual who wants to live this life. That's always what is misunderstood when this discussion takes place. You can't compel individuals that are in this position to, as what we would say, quote, clean up your life. And I'll put that in air quotes because that's, of course, us projecting on these individuals. You can't compel them to do that. You can't require them to do that. Now, you can arrest these individuals ad nauseum. You can throw them in jail if that's what you think is the best solution. But it doesn't solve any problem. I'll never forget a conversation I had on the radio. This is probably back at least 3, if not more, years ago with the amazing and unfortunately late County Commissioner Deb Hayes, who is just the most wonderful person in the world. And we were talking about this issue, again, at least 3 years ago at this point. And this is when a lot of this stuff started happening. And she called into the show, and we were talking about it. And she made the point that what we think, people that are not in this situation, individuals that are living in a house, renting an apartment, living in a townhome, whatever, that can't even wrap our head around living in a car, living in a homeless encampment, have never been in that situation, of which I will admit I have never been anywhere near that situation. So I can't wrap my head around the situation at all. But she made the point, and I've never heard anybody else make it as concisely as she did, and I'm sure I'll botch it. I don't know that I have the interview. I wish I still had it. But she made the point very clearly that individuals in this position, they don't see it as an issue. They don't want to go to a detox center in Wilmington and get clean. They're not interested in living a life like you or I do, where we wake up in a home, an apartment, or whatever, and go to work. They're not interested in that lifestyle. And she made the point, and the line that always stuck with me was that they have their rights. They are free individual citizens. They can pretty much do whatever the hell they want until it crosses the line of legality. And she made the point that these individuals have rights until their rights, them exercising their rights, start encroaching on other individuals' rights. And that's, unfortunately, this was back when you had these homeless encampments in downtown Wilmington, who, when you had individuals that couldn't go into parking garages that the city owns, maintains, and operates because they were being harassed by swarms of homeless individuals in Wilmington. You can't compel these people to change their lives. You can't force them to change the way in which they live. You can throw millions of dollars a year into recovery and rehabilitation centers. If individuals don't want to change their life, no amount of money is going to solve the problem. This is another example of how money does not solve a problem. Funding nonprofits in various groups does not solve this problem, unfortunately. So what is the solution for this? There isn't. Because you're dealing with individuals, many of which struggle from severe mental issues, which again is not a crime, but individuals that suffer from very severe mental issues that don't want to change. And you can't compel them to do so. Now, what does that look like in the interim? Because there obviously is issues here. You've got a man dead this morning. What does this actually look like in practicality? Unfortunately, I think it's a larger police presence. Because there is so much illegal activity that is going on in this area, and I'm not even talking about the trespass, and we're going to ignore that part of it, just for argument's sake. But because there is so much illegal activity in these areas, a lot of it is drug use, law enforcement needs to, unfortunately, I believe, start arresting these individuals. And I don't think that's a good solution. Let me be perfectly clear. I don't think having our jails full with individuals who are dealing with severe mental issues, have serious drug addiction, that is the solution to the problem. By no stretch of the imagination is it. But you've at some point got to begin breaking the cycle. And because there is so much lawlessness in many of these areas, that I think is one of the first steps. Now, yes, you make the services available, and they are available. WDI? Some group in Wilmington has a full-time liaison that they pay to interface with this community, to interface with the homeless community in Wilmington, providing them and offering them services. And now, this, of course, goes too far when we find out that taxpayers are funding clean needles for them to shoot up heroin. That is absolutely not the solution to the problem. Under no circumstances, in no way, should law enforcement be encouraging illegal activity or these various groups funded by taxpayers, should they be encouraging illegal drug use, encouraging these individuals to shoot up drugs like heroin? That's absurd. It's a very tricky, complicated issue. I truly believe there is no good solution to it. But I can promise you this. The violence that takes place, the assaults, the murders that take place, that is not sustainable. I truly don't know what the solution is. It's been something that's been talked about in local government between the city of Wilmington and New Hanover County a lot over the last couple of years. You saw a lot of these efforts spearheaded by individuals like Wilmington City Councilman Luke Waddell, Republican members of the Board of Commissioners. It was, you know, Deb Hayes and Leanne Pierce. Now it's Leanne Pierce and Dane Scalise and Luke working together to try and figure out how you traverse this very tricky issue. I don't know. It's a tough one. But I can promise you this headline, one dead after shooting in woods off Kerr Avenue in Wilmington, I can promise you this is not the solution. Allowing these individuals to continue on their own accord is not the solution. There is no compassion in what we're seeing right now. You got somebody dead and somebody likely going to prison for a significant amount of time due to their actions. Now, we'll find out more details, presumably, as this goes on. I don't know why WP didn't release the name of the suspects they have in custody. That doesn't indicate whether they've charged anybody. We know the Wilmington Police Department is awful with producing information for the public. Very slow, very delayed. That's nothing new at all. So we'll see. It's an unfortunate situation, not the way to start off a show on a Friday, but some important local news to pass along to you this morning. We change gears and head on over to some national news. Yesterday, it was President Trump in the Oval Office breaking down and announcing some new trade and some issue and some trade restrictions, some tariffs, some discussions on that. The president signed an executive order yesterday introducing the Fair and Reciprocal Plan, which is what he's calling a sweeping trade policy aimed at reducing the U.S. trade deficit and addressing what he describes as unfair trade practices by foreign partners. The plan, which includes imposing reciprocal tariffs on imports, seeks to level the playing field for American workers, manufacturers, and businesses by ensuring that the United States charges the same tariff on foreign goods as those countries charge on American exports. I have continued in my disagreement with the president on these overarching tariffs. They will have, in my opinion, my estimation, and the experts that I've talked to, it will have a grave impact on the American economy. It will not cause prices to be lower. The amount of manufacturing that it returns to the United States is minuscule in comparison to all of the jobs that are lost as a result of all of the various input costs to the supply chain skyrocket in price, causing current U.S. manufacturing to have to change the way in which they operate, which most of the time includes layoffs. When a company is no longer having the same bottom line that they were due to a huge rise in input costs for the production, the cheapest and easiest way for them to cut costs is by firing people. It's by laying people off. You reduce your cost. It's the easiest way to do it. It's not the best way to do it, but it's the easiest way to do it. And it's the quickest way to do it. You can cut that money off your books almost immediately. The order signed yesterday outlines a comprehensive strategy to counter non-reciprocal trade agreements and restore balance to the U.S. trade relationship with its global partners. The executive order highlights the United States' historically open economy and low average tariff rates compared to other major economies. Despite this openness, the United States has faced persistent trade deficits, which the administration argues are a result of unfair practices by trading partners. The order reads as follows. Our workers and industries bear the brunt of unfair practices and limited access to foreign markets. This situation is untenable. The trade deficit of the United States threatens our economic and national security, and has hollowed out our industry base and has made our nation dependent on other countries to meet our key security needs. The administration contends that by making trade more reciprocal and balanced, the United States can reduce its trade deficit, growing the economy and improving trade relationships to benefit the American workers, manufacturers, farmers, ranchers, entrepreneurs, and businesses. And I hear what the administration is saying. I hear what Trump is saying. I watched the executive order signings yesterday in the Oval Office. I get what he's saying. I understand logically what he's saying. But I'm not sure, to use an analogy, I'm not so sure that the juice is worth the squeeze here. The increase in immediate costs from these tariffs, I don't think, is beneficial to the American consumer. Do we need to bring manufacturing back to the United States? Absolutely. Would it be great to have more products made in the USA? Sure. But at the same time, we've got to be honest with ourselves with how we operate as Americans. We like cheap crap. We love cheap goods. We love Amazon. We love Walmart. We love Target. We love these stores. Why? Because you can walk in there, well, you used to be able to walk in there with a $20 bill and walk out with a whole bunch of stuff, none of it made in the United States. We have a consumption problem in the United States. We love consuming goods. And the reality of the situation is that it costs exorbitant amounts of money to produce and manufacture in the United States on a large scale. Why is that the case? Many of it has to do with unions. Unions have a stranglehold on traditional production and manufacturing in the United States. And to hire new individuals, to bring on new jobs in these various fields that the president talks about, these are going to be very high-paid union jobs, which is not an issue. There's nothing wrong with a high-paid union job. But who bears the brunt of that high-pay union job? Who is the one paying the costs for those employees? Who is the one that pays for the increase in input production costs for these various products? The answer is incredibly simple. It's you and I. We pay the cost. Companies don't eat it. The federal government doesn't eat it. You and I pay it. So is there a trade deficit? Yes. Do countries take advantage of us in regards to trade? Yes. But two things. Unless we're willing to change the way in which we operate and stop consuming so much cheap goods, and B, if we are okay with paying significantly higher prices to have things made in the United States, then this is the system we have to keep. I'm sure many of you, you know, listening to this are maybe not in love with what I'm saying, and that's fine. But this is the reality of how we are as Americans. We love these goods. We love going on Amazon and buying cheap Chinese garbage to fill our houses with. We love it. We can't get enough of it. And unless we're willing to change that significantly, this is the system. Back to the administration, the Fair and Reciprocal Plan refocuses on addressing non-reciprocal trade agreements through a multifaceted approach, and there are four. One, reciprocal tariffs. The United States will determine and impose tariffs equivalent to those charged by trading partners on American goods. This includes tariffs, unfair taxes, and other barriers that disadvantage U.S. businesses and workers. Number two, non-tariff barriers. The plan will target non-tariff barriers, such as regulatory requirements, subsidies, and intellectual property violations that impede U.S. market access and competitiveness. Now, that sounds good to me. Regulatory requirements, cutting red tape to make production and manufacturing cheaper? I'm all in favor of that. Getting government the hell out of the way so that these products and these products can be produced? No issue with that at all. Exchange rate manipulation. The administration will address policies and practices that cause exchange rates to deviate from their market value, wage suppression, and other policies that harm U.S. businesses and workers. And finally, comprehensive fairness. The plan will ensure that fairness is factored in all forms of unfair trade practices, whether written or unwritten, that disadvantage the United States. The executive order directs the Secretary of Commerce and the United States Trade Representative, in consultation with other key officials, to investigate the harm caused by non-reciprocal trade agreements and propose remedies to achieve reciprocal trade relations with our various parties. Within 180 days, the Director of the Office of Management and Budget is required to assess the fiscal impacts of the plan on the federal government and the public, that's key, and deliver a written report to the president. And there's two different things it includes. A VAT, a value-added tax, which is an awful idea. Value-added tax literally means you and I pay for it. I mean, if you purchase things in the UK, they have a VAT. So not only would you have sales tax, but then you'd have a value-added tax on top of it, immediately costing the U.S. taxpayer more money. And then some of these non-tariff barriers, government-imposed measures or policies that restrict trade, import policies, technical barriers, issues like that. It's a trade, like everything else, like most of the things we discuss, not a super easy problem to deal with. It is relatively complicated. I continue to be hesitant. I continue to disagree with the president on one of his favorite words, self-described, says it's one of his favorite words in the dictionary. That's tariffs. Don't think they're good for the U.S. consumer. I don't think they're good for the U.S. economy overall. Now, you can go back. The United States, before it had any sort of federal income tax, tariffs is what funded the government. And it was relatively successful at doing that for pretty close to a century. Or for around the first 100 years the United States existed, tariffs is what funded the federal government. But the federal government that existed in those times when tariffs could fund it is completely unrecognizable from the bureaucratic state that we live in right now. There was no Social Security. There was no Medicare. There was no Medicaid. There was no food stamps. None of these things. All of the government bloat that exists right now, of course, didn't when tariffs were used to fund the government. And I think that context is important because you'll see comments online. You may even hear from individuals within the administration that, well, we used to just fund the government with tariffs. Yeah, but you got to look at the size of the government at that time and look at the kind of goods that were being imported to the United States. While I disagree with the president on this, I'm not going to bury him over it. I'm not going to be too crazy critical. I want to see how it plays out. Trump's a smart guy. He has surrounded himself with very smart people in regards to economics. He knows what he's doing. I'm not saying he's completely out to lunch on this. I'm just not sure that the juice is worth the squeeze here. The idea that you're going to bring back mass manufacturing to the United States without it completely burying the American middle class in regards to huge increases in cost, I think is a fairy tale. I don't see how you could bring all of this manufacturing back to the U.S. and have the goods cost anywhere near what they do right now. Because the labor that is producing these things in China, in places like Vietnam, is incredibly cheap. Now, of course, that has its issues, of course. There is huge amounts of individuals that are being treated essentially as slaves in regards to production and manufacturing. But that's what's happening. And it benefits the United States consumer, whether you like it or not. It allows you to go into Walmart and buy a set of silverware, whatever, Walmart branded silverware for $6. If those were made in the United States, they would be 2, 3, 4, 5, 10 times more expensive. And so the question is, can the American consumer deal with these increases in prices due to the things being produced in the United States? Trump was elected because people were frustrated with the economy. And my hesitation with all of this is that these things go into effect within 180 days. Trump is going to have a plan, 179 days now. The president's going to have a plan on his desk. And I just am very fearful that in the short term, prices are going to rise significantly. I understand he's trying to get somewhere, but prices are going to rise significantly. And that is going to completely derail everything else that this administration is going to try and do. It will bury the Republicans in the midterm election. And it will likely set up Democrats to have a major victory in 28. I think there's other ways to handle this besides saying we're going to put a VAT, a value-added tax, or we're going to impose crazy tariffs on our trading partners across the country. I think there's other ways to do this. One of the big ways is government interference. It's government picking winners and losers with incentive programs, whether it be at the state level or the federal level. We see it all the time. Here in North Carolina, there's a program called JDIG, the Job Development Improvement Grant, I think is what it stands for. And it's essentially the state doling out money to companies to bring jobs. It's the government picking winners and losers. That's one aspect of it, where government interference. The other is the insane, crazy amount of red tape that is required to jump through or hurdle over to start a business, to expand a business in the United States, in various municipalities in various states. Those are two things that the government could do now with the snap of a finger to immediately try and reduce some of the economic pressures that people are feeling. I don't think you're going to enjoy seeing a receipt from Amazon that shows $7 sales tax and another $12 VAT added on top of your product. I can promise you, you're not going to enjoy seeing that. And that's not going to help the middle class in any way, shape, or form. So we'll see what happens. This is going to be a major conversation over the next couple of months. We'll continue to talk about it. We'll continue to bring experts on to talk about it as well. And we'll work through it and see what comes of all of this. I want to remind you that you can get access to daily show notes and bonus content, including a monthly hangout where we jump on a Zoom call for a couple of hours and talk about politics, the news of the day. You can find that over at patreon.com/Nick Craig, where you can get access to daily show notes and more. Well, there are a couple of tiers available, $5, $10 a month. If you believe that you are getting some value out of the show, you can head on over to patreon.com/Nick Craig. That's patreon.com/Nick Craig. We've already had a couple of individuals come on board over the last almost month that the show's been taking place. Your support is greatly appreciated. Thank you so much. If you're interested, patreon.com/Nick Craig. We've got a lot more to get into this morning, including RFK Jr.'s Senate confirmation. We will talk about that. Plus, also coming up, a Venezuelan street gang member arrested in Raleigh. We'll have details on that as well. You're listening to The Nick Craig Show, streaming live this morning on YouTube, Rumble, and X, and available 24/7 via The Nick Craig Show podcast. And welcome back to The Nick Craig Show, streaming live this Friday morning on YouTube, Rumble, and X. Don't forget that you can take the show with you and watch it on YouTube, youtube.com/@TheNickCraigShow, or just search for The Nick Craig Show on YouTube. You can find links to all of the social media channels, all the different podcast platforms by visiting my website as well. It's nickcraig.com. Well, Trump's cabinet is finally getting filled out, and Robert F. Kennedy is on his way to make America healthy again. The United States Senate confirmed RFK Jr. yesterday morning to lead the Department of Health and Human Services by a vote of 52-48. Kennedy's confirmation is a huge moment in the federal government's role in the health of the American people, likely the most significant development since the passage of the Affordable Care Act, aka Obamacare, back in 2010. Senator Mitch McConnell said was the lone Republican voting against the nomination, joining 47 Democrats. I don't really understand what Mitch McConnell is up to. Is there, you know, we of course love to talk about Sleepy Joe Biden, his mental capacity, his mental capability. It seems like Mitch McConnell almost might be worse than Joe Biden is. He opposed Pete Hegseth. He opposed Tulsi Gabbard. And now he's opposing RFK. What the hell's Mitch McConnell doing? Old turtle man. Well, McConnell had this to say.
Well, Mr. McConnell fails to prove that he is the best possible person to lead the America's largest health agency. As he takes office, I sincerely hope Mr. Kennedy will choose not to sow fear or doubt and division, but to restore the trust to the American health institutions.
Sounds about like Mitch McConnell, right? Typical long-winded, ridiculous, stupid statement from him. Why are these guys battling back against every single one of these Trump appointments? I know Mitch McConnell's on his way out. I understand that. But he's got issues with everybody. Hegseth, Gabbard, RFK. And he kind of touches on it, I think, in the final part of his statement. To sow further doubt and division. How is Robert Kennedy, through the Department of Health and Human Services, going to sow division? I mean, you may have watched his confirmation hearing that took place in the Senate. I don't remember if I played any clips from it or not, but you probably saw clips on social media. Of course, Democrats trying to hammer him, claiming that he's anti-vax. And I think he made his statement and statements pretty clear. He wants there to be good science to back this up. He wants there to be actual scientific information backing up the decisions that are made in the medical profession. I don't understand how that's seeding you know, division and doubt. I don't really understand how that takes place. I mean, don't we want good science? I mean, I remember hearing during COVID-19 that I needed to shut the hell up and trust the science, man. Wear your mask, trust the science, or you're going to kill grandma. Only, of course, to later find out that there was no scientific basis for any of what went on. It was Anthony Fauci and NIH, literally, and I don't say this with anything, but literally pulling things out of their ass to just lock down the American public. And now admitted, you know, the 6 feet thing, we just kind of made it up. We didn't really know what else to do, so we decided that we were just going to come up with an arbitrary number, 6 feet, and we'll just throw it out at the American people. We'll just, you know, throw it out there and hope it works. We'll just throw it out there and hope that it solves the problem. That's not providing any health service. Mitch McConnell wants to talk about sowing division and doubt. Mitch, look in the freaking mirror. The federal government has completely lost the trust of the American public in regards to health. You have large swaths of the American public. If there was a COVID-like virus that started today, there are large swaths of the American public, myself included, that would participate in nothing that the federal government told me to do. Nothing that state government told me to do. Fool me once, shame on you. Fool me twice, shame on me. There is a lot that has to go on to course correct the complete and total distrust that the American people have in the current status of healthcare. And for very good reason. We were lied to for years. We were told a whole litany of issues that were taking place that are a whole bunch of solutions to problems that were taking place that ended up being complete and total utter nonsense. RFK Jr. was on Fox News last night with Laura Ingraham. She had the first exclusive interview with him. And he was asked about vaccines because I assume that's what Mitch McConnell is referring to. That's what Democrats want to beat up RFK on. Let's hear it directly from the horse's mouth. What did he have to say in regards to that?
You need to know what the risk profile is for these products.
Do you think the COVID vaccine was safe and the boosters were safe? I mean, a lot of people don't talk about adverse effects.
We don't have good data on it, and that is a crime. The fact that we don't have a surveillance system that actually works. In 2010, CDC has a surveillance system called the Vaccine Adverse Event Reporting System, and it's supposed to pick up injuries. But CDC did a study of that system in 2010, and that study said, and this is a published study by CDC, that it captures less than 1% of the vaccine injuries. That's inexcusable. Congress has repeatedly, and the Institute of Medicine, the National Academy of Sciences, have repeatedly ordered CDC to put together a better vaccine.
Will you require it?
And we will do that right away.
Sounds great to me. Yeah, you heard about this system back years ago that's operated by the CDC where there's adverse effects to vaccines. The system is just bogus. It's not capturing accurate data. So that's the statement from RFK. That we need good data to back up our decisions. How is that, going to Mitch McConnell's ridiculous point, how is that sowing further doubt and division, which is what the great senator from Kentucky had to say? I don't know. As I mentioned back during the confirmation process, I'm not in love with Robert F. Kennedy Jr. He is not a conservative. He is not a Republican. He does not have those values. Now he is working under Trump, so that's good. That's encouraging. Does he believe that America needs to be healthy? Has he advocated for that for quite some time? Do I think he will make significant strides within the Department of Health and Human Services to do that? Yes, I do. Do I think he will do a good job overall? Yes, I do. I just hope that things don't get overly political because he's not politically on the same team that you and I are. Now, if he wants to go in and rattle up Big Pharma, if he wants to force the United States and various health institutions throughout the United States to get back to, oh, I don't know, this crazy idea of actual science, great. But if things start turning political, Robert F. Kennedy Jr. is not a conservative, is not a Republican. He's a Democrat. He's a liberal. So I've thrown my prerequisites out there. I'm glad that he got confirmed. I don't think it was overall a bad pick from Trump. And the proof will be in the pudding. No pun intended if Robert F. Kennedy is able to do the job. We do have a health problem in our country. We have an obese society that is addicted to sugar, fats, and garbage foods, myself included, because it's easy, convenient, and it's cheap as hell. Go to a Whole Foods and then go to a McDonald's or a Wendy's or a Burger King. It's night and day in terms of cost. That's a problem. So we'll see. I'm excited to see what he does, and we'll keep an eye on it right here on The Nick Craig Show. For many of the stories that we are talking about this morning, I liked to read and do continue to like to read about both sides of the argument that is being made. And the great way to do that is Ground News. Ground News is an app and website that combines news from around the world in one place so you can compare coverage. For every news source, you can see if they have a political bias, how reliable the reporting is, and who owns them. One of the really neat features of Ground News is their blind spot feed that highlights news that disproportionately is covered by one side of the political spectrum. Get your news from thousands of sources in one place and verify your information and know where your news is coming from. I use Ground News every day to prep for the show. Subscribe through my link to get 40% off their Vantage subscription. It's the one that I use and gets you unlimited access to every feature. Visit nickcraig.com/ground to learn more and save 40%. Your subscription not only helps the show, but it supports Ground News as they make the media landscape more transparent. nickcraig.com/ground. That's nickcraig.com/ground. Appreciate Ground News as a service and appreciate them sponsoring in part the Nick Craig Show. Well, to cover this real quickly, TikTok is back in the United States. This is according to Apple and Google, and I did look this morning before the show. In fact, the TikTok app is back. So if you're somebody that was not a user of TikTok, of which I have said publicly and admitted I have not been. The app is back. You can download it again and create an account. So that is back in the Apple and Google stores this morning as the president continues to deal with, in the case of TikTok, we're talking about a foreign entity in China that does not have the United States' best interests in mind, does not have your or my best interests. And there are serious concerns about security and privacy. The amount of data that they are collecting about U.S. consumers. Now, the Supreme Court is, we've talked about in the past. Supreme Court has ruled on this. Trump issued an executive order delaying the ban. I still don't believe he has the authority to do that, but nevertheless. So it's back on in the United States with presumably a sale imminent to at least a large U.S. stakeholder. So how this shakes out, again, don't know, but it is back this morning, and it will likely be a big cultural issue that we continue to track over the next couple of months. A very concerning headline this morning over at CarolinaJournal.com. Teresa Opeka's got the story. Tren de Aragua, which is a Venezuelan street gang. A suspect has been arrested in Raleigh as part of an ICE crackdown. So you've got Venezuelan street gang members being arrested in our state capital. A suspected member of the dangerous Venezuelan street gang was arrested in Raleigh back last Saturday, February 8th, by U.S. Immigration and Customs Enforcement alongside other officials. ICE issued a press release on Wednesday on the arrest of a 24-year-old Venezuelan named Ricardo Grandillo. He was arrested at a home in Raleigh where a handgun, ammunition, and 10 other illegal Venezuelan migrants were discovered. He is suspected in a mass shooting in Chicago and is wanted on federal charges for illegal entry into the United States and has had a warrant out for his arrest for quite some time. According to the report, Grandillo illegally entered the United States near El Paso, Texas on October the 1st, 2022. Officials said that U.S. Border Patrol encountered him, after which he was paroled into the country. This is the waving of the white flag that Joe Biden's administration was doing, and given a notice to appear in court. And the next sentence I know is going to shock many of you. He never showed up for his immigration appointment. Really? That's amazing to hear that a member of a Venezuelan street gang who crossed into the United States illegally didn't bother showing up for his immigration appointment. I am shocked and beside myself with that revelation this morning. Yeah, of course not. This guy's part of a Venezuelan street gang. He's a dangerous, violent criminal. And Democrats like Joe Biden and his border czar, Kamala Harris, for whatever stupid reason, thought that these individuals were just going to come into the United States and all of a sudden stop being dangerous criminals. And oh, I'm sure they'll show up to their court. No, instead he was shooting and killing people in Chicago. Jay Hill's comments over on Rumble this morning and says, I'm flabbergasted he never showed up to court. Me too, Jay Hills. I'm beside myself with this fact. I am completely shocked. My jaw has hit the floor with shock and awe over the fact that a 24-year-old Venezuelan street gang member said F you to the American legal system and didn't bother showing up for court. I know, I'm shocked. Law enforcement officers with ICE, Border Patrol, Customs and Border Protection, Air and Marine Operations, as well as the U.S. Marshal Service, arrested Grandillo at a home in Raleigh without incident. His arrest is among a crackdown on violent gangs across the country, including indictment of 8 members accused of federal crimes, including sex trafficking in Tennessee. Now, this is very interesting because this is not the first time that this Tren de Aragua gang has had North Carolina connections. We go back to September of last year when an individual known as Elzor Rojas was arrested in Charlotte. That's according to WBTV. He is also an alleged member of the gang and also wanted in Texas. Take a listen to this. Rojas is accused of illegally entering the United States in 2022 and allegedly lying to acquire an employment authorization card. That's according to a July criminal complaint filed in U.S. District Court in Texas. The man reportedly swam across the Rio Grande River and entered the United States near Eagle Pass, Texas. He was first arrested in July of 2022, just months after coming into the country in Orlando, Florida, based on domestic violence charges. However, they were dropped, and he continued to live in the country. Rojas reportedly filed an asylum claim with U.S. Citizenship and Immigration Services in Texas August the 28th of 2023, and his employment authorization card was approved February 27th of last year, 2024. Authorities allege that he is associated with crimes such as, not only did this individual cross into the country illegally, he was charged with domestic violence in Florida, charges dropped, allowed to do whatever. He filed an asylum claim in August after the assault charges in Orlando, and then received an employment authorization card. These are the crimes that he is now being alleged associated with. Homicide, kidnapping, terrorism, human trafficking, and drug trafficking. It's quite the rap sheet, no? He's also accused of evading the police in September of 2023 during a law enforcement operation against gang members in the United States, and an arrest warrant for him in December of 2023 for several additional crimes include terrorism, trafficking in arms and ammunition, money laundering, aggravated extortion, and association to a crime. Just to prove to you, and this story does a really good job at this. Teresa Opeka did a phenomenal write-up. This story proves the issue. Not only did this person come into the country illegally, but they had multiple run-ins with law enforcement. He had an arrest warrant in December of 2023, yet had his employment authorization card approved by the federal government less than 3 months later. This is how things were operating under the previous administration. Dangerous, hardened criminals were coming into the United States, literally raping and pillaging. And this administration not only was not doing anything about it, but then was giving them things like work permits while they had current warrants hanging over their head. You can't be any more backwards than that. I mean, it's completely inexcusable. And I would argue completely unexplainable how somebody with a criminal rap sheet illegally in the country is applying for and getting authorized an employment authorization card. What the hell are we doing? Not only did you break the law coming into the country illegally, domestic violent charges in Florida, human drug trafficking charges in December of 2023, and then you get this card issued by the federal government. What a joke. This is during the peak 2022 of Democrats burying their head in the sand on illegal immigration, which of course ended up resulting in a landslide victory for Trump in November of last year, and Republicans completely taking control of the Senate and the House. This is the result. This is what was going on. It took us years to now officially figure it out. We knew this was going on the entire time. But now that Trump is in there, Tom Homan, the badass that he is in there, rounding these individuals up, and now we're seeing the full story. Completely unexcusable. But this is how the previous administration operated. And this ties in very nicely with our final story of the morning, an exclusive over at the New York Post last night. The headline is this: illegal border crossings hit record low after Trump's swift crackdown and could be on track for levels not seen in 60 years. It's music to my ears. Border crossings have plummeted to levels not seen in decades this month following President Donald Trump and Tom Homan's swift crackdown on illegal immigration across the Southwest, according to the New York Post. So far in February, or what, this story was written yesterday, so we're halfway through the month, about 359 illegal migrants per day have been caught across the entire southern border. That is down 90% from where those numbers were a year ago, according to leaked Customs and Border Protection data. This information puts the United States on track to have the lowest monthly border crossings in at least 25 years. If the trend continues, the number of illegal migrants coming into the United States could hit levels not seen since the late 1960s. According to the executive director of the Center for Immigration Studies, he says that it is the lowest the United States has seen in almost a lifetime. I mean, the New York Post has this chart that really lays it all out and shows exactly what is being talked about here. Average daily crossings, 2020. This is per day, not per week, not per month, but per day. 5,333 in 2021, more than 6,400 in 2022, 5,500+ in 2023, 2,800 in 2024, and so far the average in February, halfway through the month, is only 359. Not 359,000, not 3,590. No, 359 individuals a day. You almost have to adjust the scale of the chart for this to look and make any sense. When you have numbers like 6,400 daily crossings per day just back a couple of years ago compared to what you're seeing now, it's apples and oranges. It's not even comparable. It's not even close. The CBP data shows that just 3,953 illegal migrants have been caught this month. That was through February the 11th. If that trend continues through the month, that would put February's crossings at roughly 10,000, which is a number that hasn't been seen since CBP began tracking month-to-month data back in 1999, 26 years ago. The closest the crossings have come to 10,000 was April of 2017, shortly after Trump took office the first time, when monthly crossings barely exceeded 11,000. Very, very low numbers. This time last year, border agents were seeing an average of 4,850 crossings per day, which is more than 10 times the current federal level. In Terrell County, Texas, the sheriff there, Sheriff Cleveland, says his office is usually flooded with reports of illegal migrants crossing this time of the year due to cooler weather at the border. Cleveland told the Post, quote, "It's a relief. We've gone from one extreme to the other extreme. Historic levels of people crossing, historic levels of low apprehensions. It's very, very surprising." And the front page of the New York Post this morning, which is always fun to take a look at, is this. Border crossings dropped 90% after Trump crackdown. Was it something I said? And then it's got a picture of Trump kind of snarkily looking at the camera. Great stuff. Phenomenal information. Couple of comments coming in live this morning where we stream on YouTube, Rumble, and X weekday mornings at 7 o'clock. Aqua Blue commenting on Rumble saying the 2024 numbers does not take into account if all the airplanes they flew in. You know, with the airplanes that are being flown in, from what I understand about that, and I'm sure there's some level of it, but from what the airplane flights, and of course the discussion of taking these individuals and flying them throughout the country, the individuals that they were flying to states like North Carolina, those individuals were already in the United States illegally. And you had these NGOs, these non-governmental organizations, that the United States taxpayers were funding. You had these NGOs paying to fly these individuals across the country once they were already here. Because of the screening practices of TSA and what you have to go through if you're coming into the country with passports and visas, I don't think there's a large swath of individuals. Oh, there's some, maybe. But I don't think there's large groups of individuals that are taking domestic planes into the country. And private airlines are not flying individuals across the border at those levels. They're stopped at an airport, wherever it is. And those individuals go through the same process as if you were on a domestic flight. So I think those numbers would also be captured in this CBP data. Jay Hill says, look at the energy from our leader has an effect when it comes to illegal immigration. Keep it up, Trump and Homan. Yeah, keep it up. And it makes sense, doesn't it? This is the difference between when you essentially, now Joe Biden never said this, but when you essentially say, yes, you can come into the country illegally. Another surprising and shocking statement for you this morning. People are going to do it. When you tell individuals, don't come into the country, it's not going to be a fun time for you. You are going to be sent back. You are going to be held to account. They don't. It's amazing. No laws have changed. Congress has not passed any new legislation in regard to the border. Yet, crossings are down 10x from where they were previously. 10x. It goes to show you that the entire time that the migration crisis was unfolding under Joe Biden, he single-handedly had the authority to solve the problem. He chose not to solve the problem. And the end result was tens of millions of individuals crossing into the country illegally under the previous administration. The end result was dangerous, hardened criminals, like we talked about this morning, Venezuelan street gang members being arrested in Raleigh. Those individuals were allowed to freely flow into the country because Biden was not using the powers that he had, was not using the laws that were on the books already to enforce immigration law. And more than anything else, it was his soft words and soft action on illegal immigration that allowed this issue to fester for years on end. Trump's been in office 3 weeks, not even a month yet. And what we are already seeing is a massive dip in the amount of individuals coming across the border. You had thousands of crossings per day under the Biden administration. And we're seeing just a couple of hundred under Trump. This is what actual leadership looks like. This is what leading by example looks like. And this is what it is like to have a president that is actually mentally capable. A president that can actually make a decision. Which is something that, unfortunately, you and I did not have for the last 4 years. We had Joe Biden mumbling and bumbling and fumbling his way through life. We had him mumbling his way through the presidency. And the end result was huge losses for America. That's over with. Democrats lost. Makes sense. Turns out the American public is not a fan of hundreds of thousands, millions of individuals crossing the border illegally. And the American people smarter than what Democrats want to believe. Because Joe Biden had the authority to make a change. Joe Biden had the authority to enforce laws on the books. He tried to make it out and blame the Republicans for illegal immigration because they didn't want to pass some ridiculous border bill that the Democrats whipped up. But as I'll remind you, Trump has not changed any laws. Congress has not changed any laws over the last 3 weeks in regards to immigration. We're just enforcing what was already on the book. Huge win for Trump on immigration. I know it was a major issue for a lot of people, and it's another promise made, promise kept. We'll likely continue to see more data flowing out of CBP in the weeks and months to come, and we will keep a close eye on it right here. Well, that is going to do it for a Friday edition of The Nick Craig Show. Have a happy Valentine's Day. Don't forget that you can listen to the podcast 24/7 by checking out The Nick Craig Show wherever you get your podcasts. And we are back with you live Monday morning, 7 a.m. on YouTube, Rumble, and X, and again, 24/7 via podcast. Have a great weekend.